If you could trade a bench warmer for the greatest of all time, you'd do it, right? Get your business a game-changing pickup by choosing the commerce platform with the internet's best converting checkout. That's Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you're covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you possibly need to take control and take your business to that very next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Rank squad, and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today as we look through the last ever match day of the Champions League group stage as you know it. Goodbye, farewell of Vida Sane to the old school format of the Champions League. This is it. It's over. It's done. And joining me today, it's our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm okay, mate. Yeah, I'd forgotten that. We're all being thrown into one big old league next season, aren't they? And then we've got this weird system with the playoffs and, yeah, it's going to be really strange. Hope it's good. I just really hope it's good. Still can't really figure out how it will definitely be better, but hopefully it'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, there were obviously some games over the last 2 days where we've seen complete dead rubbers. There have been groups completely decided before the last games. And I suppose it probably takes away from that. There's going to be more relying on every game. So there's something to be said for that. But equally, you look at Group F tonight, and we'll get onto it. But one of the most entertaining, exciting endings to a group that we've ever seen. And so we'll be losing that as well. It's all, yeah, there are positives and negatives, I assume.
Yeah.
That's we good. Have, though, Dean, a last 16, seeded, unseeded, and we have an 8-team drop-off into the Europa League playoffs as well. So just before we get started and get into our takeaways from all the games this week, just wanted to basically do the admin and read them out. So the seeded teams of the last 16 are Bayern, Arsenal, Real Madrid, Real Sociedad, Atletico Madrid, Dortmund, Manchester City, and Barcelona. The unseeded teams, Copenhagen, PSV Eindhoven, Napoli, Inter, Lazio, PSG, RB Leipzig, and Porto. And the 8 teams dropping into those Europa League playoffs are Galatasaray, Lens, Braga, Benfica, Feyenoord, Milan, Young Boys, and Shakhtar Donetsk. It's pretty cool, I think, in terms of the way it's laid out. I would just say, though, obviously a lot of chat is made about winning the group, of becoming the seeded team. If you get up against Napoli, Inter, PSG, to an extent, Leipzig, Lazio and Porto, you're now looking at that and going, oh, well, it's not been that beneficial to win the group, has it?
Not really. No, that is a good point, actually. Ultimately, you can't read too much into it, can you? I mean, the form's going to change as well by the time we get to the knockouts for a lot of these teams. And winning the group is likely to give you the best chance of getting a weaker opponent, but ultimately, often it doesn't turn out to be the case.
Yeah. I mean, it's one way or the other. We'll start with tonight, I think, DJ. And it was madness in Group F, as we mentioned. Newcastle United lost 2-1 at St. James's Park to AC Milan, became the second English team to finish bottom of the group in this year's competition and drop out of the European spots completely. They will not have European football in the spring. Given Eddie Howe's injury list at the moment, I imagine he might not be too worried about that.
Yeah, this is kind of my takeaway, mate. They have sacrificed a spot in the Europa League here. They could have had it. And I can't get my head around whether this is wise or not. Obviously, they didn't do it on purpose. Like, they didn't decide to end up with no European football. But at 1-1, they didn't have to take the approach that they took. They didn't have to go and lose that game. But it felt like their desire to remain in the Champions League left them so vulnerable on the counter that there was always a good chance, possibly even a better chance, that it was going to be AC Milan that ran away and scored the second goal, than it was to be Newcastle. You know, you look at Milan, especially because of the subs they brought on in the second half. I think bringing on Jovic and Chukwueze was pretty significant in the end.
Well, I mean, the three substitutes combined for the second Milan goal. So, I think Pioli got that one spot on.
Yeah, but it wasn't not even just the actual goal. Just Milan was so... They were beaten in the first half, like, comprehensively, and, like, they were the second best team. But in the second half, they were very different. And part of that is because they were allowed to break away in the manner that they were. And part of me feels this is all very raw and fresh because we're literally talking as the game has finished. And I know that there'll be a lot of, like, positivity towards Newcastle for their approach. And Alan Shearer's tweeting, "So near yet so far. Well done, Newcastle." But it feels a little bit to me like Newcastle are running before they can walk here, because the Europa League is a pretty good level for Newcastle to be at. They've kind of skipped the stages of growth that you would normally go through to get to being this Champions League type team. And let's be honest, you just read out those Europa League teams that are in there now. Newcastle right now are more suited to being in with that bunch of teams than they are with the teams that are going to be in the top pot in the Champions League or whatever. So I'm really, really torn over what this is for Newcastle, because they want everything and they want it right now. And it feels a bit strange to me because this is a club that have a history of coming up short and winning nothing. And I just think that the Europa League could have been quite good for them. I know you've pointed out the injury, and I understand that. And look, you could also flip that and say, well, it gives them a better chance now of qualifying for the Champions League again through their league position, because it's all they will have to focus on, as well as, I don't know, try and win the Carabao Cup. But also, my other takeaway from this is that this is a real test of loyalty, because how long do the ownership see this through with Eddie Howe and these players? Because there will be more of a temptation to seek that superstardom that I suspect, and I think many suspect, that they truly crave. I mean, even today, there's links with Jose Mourinho being the successor to Eddie Howe. You go back to when the takeover first happened and look at, I don't know, Mbappe and Harry Kane and these guys being linked to Newcastle. They're involved in the Saudi Pro League, and you see the players that they're trying to get there into those clubs. They want big names, and I don't necessarily think that that's right either. But tonight, because of the way that Newcastle went all out for that second goal, I feel like everybody that's played a part tonight is suddenly a little bit vulnerable to still being there in a year's time.
Maybe. I mean, you've spoken at length before about the FFP ramifications that Newcastle have to abide by, the fact that they are being watched so carefully, considering how much money
Jan,
they do
this
have.
Summer, they will go again, mate.
Don't get me wrong. I don't think they're not going to continue to grow. I don't think that by any means, but they do have to be careful in the way that they build it. And it's going to involve evolution rather than revolution. I think
it's more how that I'm concerned for.
Yeah, that's really fair. I do think that just on that point about the way that they chase the game, if PSG are winning at Borussia Dortmund, do Newcastle go and chase the game in the way they do? Probably not. I think that the fact that it was there for the taking, if they had got that second goal at 1-1 and suddenly the pressure's heaped back onto PSG, is suddenly something that they have to think about. And I think that in that context, it probably makes a little bit more sense than actually, if they'd gone chasing this when they were already out and they were hoping against hope that, you know, that Borussia Dortmund were coming from behind to get something against PSG, and then they lost their Europa League spot, yeah, I'd probably be more tempted to agree with you. But because the opportunity felt like it was there, and they would have been, you know, those players and the managers and the staff will have been updated on what was going on at Signal Iduna Park, or the Westfalenstadion, as it's properly called, throughout the night. And they will have been told, you know, this is on if you can get that second goal at 1-1. I can understand them throwing caution to the wind a little bit in that regard, although I do think you're right in that the Europa League felt like a good competition, a good level, and also something that Newcastle could set their sights on firmly winning, as opposed to this Champions League last 16.
I think you try and win the Carabao Cup and the Europa League before you try and win the Premier League and the Champions League. That seems like a more logical pathway to belonging at the
evolution
top.
Evolution or revolution, right?
Yeah. And I don't mean to sit here like criticizing Newcastle, because it was a fantastic game to watch and I loved it. But because I wasn't emotional about the game at all, and I just literally just sat back very neutral and watched the way it unfolded, and it just seemed pretty obvious that Milan were going to win it in that last 20 minutes because of the way that they were, Newcastle being. And I don't even think it's necessarily naivety. I think it's just, it was honestly a desperation to remain in the Champions League. And, you know, I think AC Milan would have been as desperate for that too. Milan fans aren't going to be like that excited to be in the Europa League, are they? I think Newcastle fans probably would have been more excited about Europa League trips than any Milan fans are going to be. They're not going to look forward to the Thursday night action particularly, but they've got it. And it's because of probably that maybe it's that level of experience that saw them over. I mean,
a little bit of nous.
Yeah, maybe, mate. When you've got, as I say, you've got Pulisic. I mean, Giroud's pass on that goal is brilliant to Pulisic. I think it's so, so good. I thought it was a fluke at first. I thought it was like a miss hit, and it wasn't. And just those little things that Newcastle haven't got yet. And that's why I think ultimately the Champions League was just a step too far, but they gave it a really good crack.
Yeah, in an incredibly difficult group as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah. Other groups they'd probably gone through.
Yeah, definitely. Let's just talk about the other game in this group. Borussia Dortmund 1, PSG 1. My big takeaway was that both of these teams are incredibly profligate in front of goal. It was an exercise in profligacy. And so much of this should have been 3-3 at halftime. There were so many chances for both sides. I thought Borussia Dortmund probably edged the first half, PSG the better side in the second. But there is a sense, I think, around this PSG side that something isn't quite clicking. Now, there were key players out, Ousmane Dembele missing, Gonzalo Ramos nowhere to be seen. There are some, you know, big parts of this PSG side that haven't quite all got there at the same time yet. But equally, there is an element of them that you're thinking, this could be, you know, it didn't turn out to be this way. They've obviously got through with the 1-1 draw. But if that result at St. James's Park goes the other way, and as we spoke about, it could quite easily have, then PSG would be currently looking or staring down the barrel of being in the Europa League, something that hasn't happened in, what, a decade. So the fact that they were unable to convert this second half dominance into goals, they were a little bit unlucky on one particular call. It was slightly offside from Kylian Mbappe. It's the correct call, but it was just the ball was delayed a split second too long, and Hakimi probably should have released it a little bit earlier, but it was a good move. There were some really nice sweeping moments. There were some incredible blocks on the line. There was one in the first half from Niklas Süle. No idea how he gets to the ball. Mbappe goes around the keeper. He sort of sticks his leg in the air and diverts it over the bar. Some stunning stuff. But for all that, and for all of those, there were also lots of opportunities where PSG fired straight down Gregor Kobel's neck. There were opportunities where they just sliced wide of goal when the opportunity to start an overload was on. And they had to look to Warren Zaire-Emery to actually be the man to dig them out of trouble here. The 17-year-old, who's become such a mainstay in the middle of the park, and don't get me wrong, this isn't to take away from his talent or his ability. The fact that PSG are relying on a player of that age and inexperience to be the one digging them out of trouble when they're right in the mix against it in the last day of the Champions League is pretty telling, I think, at this point. This squad have not got to where they need to be. And there have been moments in the last couple of weeks, I think, that we've seen from PSG where they've been a little bit lucky. They were obviously in the last game against Newcastle in that decision they got at the end. Also in a couple of games in the league where you're like, oh, you're not quite at it yet. And I'm not sure what it is. And I do believe Luis Enrique will get there because I think Luis Enrique is a wonderful manager. But something isn't quite right with him just yet. And by the time that February comes around, we might be talking about a completely different side that are fully in gear and no one will want to play. But right now, I think if you are drawing PSG and you're one of the proper big guns of this competition, at your, you know, Man City's, your Real Madrid's, you're probably looking at that and going, winnable, they can't score goals.
Yeah, yeah, possibly. I mean, they are unbeaten in their last six now, PSG. So maybe they are starting to turn a corner. Their last defeat was actually against AC Milan in the Champions League. But they don't feel convincing, I think is probably fair. And I think that, look, maybe it's, mate, they made so many changes. This team has really gone through an overhaul. So, you know, I think any side that made the amount of stuff, I was talking at the start of the season about how excited I was about PSG, and I might actually like them now because they're being built differently. And so, you know, we'd have to say, okay, well, they're not as good as they were. You know, this team has probably fallen away since Neymar and Messi, etc.
Although those players didn't step up for them in the Champions League.
Exactly, either, yeah. So maybe overall this turns out to be better over the next couple of years. At least they're building something here, whereas that was like all or nothing. So maybe in a way this is more interesting.
Yeah, it's a more sustainable project, I think. Possibly, but yeah. There's a long way to go, it feels, after a performance like that tonight, even if they were dominant in the second half. Another team who seems to be on the rocks, probably far more on the rocks than PSG, to be honest, are Barcelona, beaten 3-2 at Antwerp. Two losses in a week, Dean. They lost to Girona at home at the weekend. They've lost to Antwerp.
That's incredible,
in the Champions
League. Say it like that.
They've still topped the group. It's four losses in their last nine. And suddenly that game against Valencia, I think, at the weekend, looks like a real, oh my God, they have to win that game all of a sudden, out of nowhere. Now, people will be going, Barcelona topped the group. What are you on about? But they only topped the group because the, you know, performances in the earlier games. And actually what we've seen from them in the last couple of weeks has been really unconvincing. Yes, they have injury problems. Yes, there are issues. But a performance tonight from Oriol Romeu that he will want to forget for the rest of his life. Two mistakes for both of the first two Antwerp goals. Granted, he's not helped out loads by his goalkeeper for the first one, but he gives the ball away on the edge of his own box for the second. Barcelona come back and equalise twice. The second one, in sort of the 88th minute, from Marc Guiu, who's 17 years old. And to be fair, the first goal is completely created by 16-year-old Lamine Yamal. So the future remains bright. But from that moment at 2-2, you go, okay, sigh of relief. They haven't lost to the team that haven't picked up a point for the entirety of this Champions League campaign so far. A team they beat 6-0 in the first game of this group stage. And then Antwerp goes straight up the other end and score. And it's almost kind of unbelievable stuff. And look, shout out to the Antwerp crowd who were there in numbers, an amazing night for them. And they got this over the line and they got to celebrate that massive win against Barcelona. That's so cool. But you've got to look at this Barcelona squad, even if it was much changed and there was a lot of rotation today, and think, what on earth is going on?
Yeah, I mean, look, Xavi's getting a lot of stick right now. And he's under...
It's hard to defend him after this kind of performance, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's under growing pressure, I think you'd have to say. And it wouldn't surprise me if, not too far in the distant future, his job is more seriously under some threat. I mean, I saw one post, which I've just managed to dig out there as you were talking, from a Twitter page, Barca Universal. They put out debate, who is to blame, Xabi, the players, or the board? And Xavi gets definitely the most amount of comments. The type being, Xavi, he is mid. You will see it eventually, everyone. Someone else said, the players play according to his instructions. It has to be down to Xavi. Xavi seems to lack the technical know-how on how this team should play. There's no cohesiveness from defence to midfield to attack. We barely have any smooth transitions. Why is Lewandowski still starting?
Well, the reason that Lewandowski's still starting is because they don't really have any other options apart from a 17-year-old they've nabbed out of the academy.
Yeah.
But they
do
have
Lewandowski out in the moment like that.
You can't. And you do have Vitor Roque on the way. So that is something to... But he's a youngster as well. And throwing him at the deep end isn't probably the answer either.
You know, for the board, like, sacking Xavi is a big call. Like, and I don't think
especially when there's not an obvious candidate to come in, I think.
Yeah. So We'll see. I mean, this is a storyline that's certainly going to begin to play out a little more now, because losing to teams of that size in the space of a week suddenly changes the reading of a season. And Barca were already, we've talked about it various times on Patreon and a couple of times on this main pod, that they're unconvincing. Even when they win, just kind of fine margins a lot of the time. So yeah, really interesting times.
I just want to give a shout out to George Ilenkenna, who scored the third goal, last minute of this game, put through on goal, really calm finish. And I saw a tweet from football talent scout Jacek Kulik, who's on there as at @ftalentscout on Twitter. And he said, in his last three games, he got 81 minutes against Charleroi in the Belgian Cup, and he scored twice. 13 minutes against Cercle Brugge in the Jupiler Pro League, scored. 11 minutes against Barcelona in the Champions League, scored. 17 years of age, something very special. Nice touch that the two goal scorers at the end of this game, both 17. The future is now, the future is bright. But yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on there. Cool, we'll rattle through the games and the rest of this group. There was an absolutely barnstorming game in the other one in this group. Porto won 5-3 at the Dragao against Shakhtar Donetsk. First off, Wenders and Galeno loves playing against Shakhtar. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's four goals and an assist in his two games against them in the Champions League group stages this year. And he deserves some praise and some credit, because his start to, like, well, he was at Porto. He left Porto to go to Braga after basically not being able to break into the team, was bought back after Porto sold Luis Diaz to Liverpool. And struggled to begin with to get into this team, to make his way, and actually has become a really key part of the way that this side works under Conceição. And he's so much, you know, a key cog in the way that they attack and the way that the two front men get into the game. I really, really enjoy watching him play, and have done for a long while. He's been someone who I've wanted to see. So you've heard me banging on about him on here for a while, but he's just really starting to show his worth again, I think, in this Porto side. And it's really nice to see for a player who was pretty derided on his return to the club. This game was mad. I mean, he scored, then Porto had, you know, Porto were absolutely furious about the Shakhtar equaliser because the linesman put his flag up. The ref waved play on. Shakhtar went through and scored. The goal was then checked for offside. It was given as not offside, but a couple of the Porto defenders had just stopped because the flag went up. Now, obviously, play to the whistle, et cetera, et cetera. But you expect when the flag goes up, the referee to go, yeah, fair enough, and blow up as well. And they were absolutely livid. Conceição was booked. I think Diogo Costa was booked as well. It was all very, very confusing. They took the lead again, and they were pegged back again to 2-2 by the fact that by a goal that they thought was a foul. So everyone was absolutely apoplectic in the Gregal. Everyone very, very angry. Thankfully, they were able to get the job done. Taremi scored a good goal. And then Francisco Conceição, obviously son of the coach, back from Ajax on loan after that move didn't really work out for him, came on and scored with his first touch. Absolutely sensational. Shakhtar pulled one back. They got a late one. It was all chaos towards the end. Shakhtar had to win to make it count and to get through in place of Porto. So they obviously threw caution to the wind, but a really, really entertaining game at the same time, and one that piqued interests, I think. It was one where both teams let loose. Sometimes both teams need to win and they're quite cagey. This was one where both teams needed to win and just let loose, and we had a lot of fun with it. So yeah, shout out to those two teams. Very, very interesting. Yeah. And Shakhtar are going to be fun in the Europa League, I think. They've shown that they can hang with the big boys at this point. Right, onwards. Atleti beat Lazio 2-0. Very comfortable. Very, very, very comfortable this. And it, considering it was a shootout to see who won the group, I don't think it should have been this comfortable for this Atleti side. But they controlled the game from the absolute get-go. Griezmann scored really early on. He now is joint top scorer in the Champions League with a couple of others, including Alvaro Morata, who should have gone outright top, missed an absolute sitter. And then, yeah, game was wrapped up. Later on, Samuel Lino scoring a good goal. Atleti had another one ruled out for an offside. There were various chances to make this lead come more comfortable than it needed to be. But yeah, I thought this was one of their better performances, Atleti. They were in cruise control from almost minute one. Lazio barely registered. And It was a very commanding display of why teams will fear them going into the last 16. So shouts out Atleti. And in the other game in that group, Celtic finally ended the curse. They beat Feyenoord 2-1. It ended a run of 15 Champions League games without a win, and was also Celtic's first home win in the competition in a decade. And it was it was dramatic as well. So Celtic went 1-0 up from a penalty. Lewis Palmer put it away. They were pegged back. Feyenoord had a really good chance early on and then really didn't offer very much until late on, when Minter looked like he was going to extend that winless record by popping up at the back post in sort of the 83rd, 84th minute. But in added time, Lagerbielko, someone that Celtic signed in summer, a centre-back Swedish, popped up with a winner. And it was, you know, great play from Matt O'Reilly to set it up again. I said at the weekend, I don't think, you know, aside from maybe Jude Bellingham at Real Madrid, I'm not sure there's a player more important to their side than Matt O'Reilly at Celtic. He is the absolute nucleus of everything they do, going forwards, in the middle of the park, winning the ball back. He is a sensational footballer, and it will not be very long before Matt O'Reilly is knocking around at a, you know, an even bigger club than Celtic. Mate. He is that talented.
Yeah, don't say that around any other Celtic fans, mate, because that's the last thing that anyone around there needs right now. Matt O'Reilly leaving. They need to build the club upon him and build him a statue maybe in a couple of years if he stays, because fulfilling all his potential there. There's definitely a couple of clubs in the Premier League looking at him, but Brendan Rodgers cannot let him go.
No, he won't go in January, I don't think. Anyway.
No chance.
It would probably bring the entire Celtic castle crumbling down. But shout out Brendan for breaking that streak, and look, gives Celtic hope going into what you'd imagine is next year's competition, given the lead at the top of the Scottish Premiership. A couple more. Sveana Zvezda 2, Manchester City 3. A night for City's young boys. Not the other ones in their group.
Not the other team.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the same young boys.
Some great stuff here. Really, really enjoyed this game. And I wasn't expecting to. I sort of stuck it on to be like,
it was an entertaining one. Yeah, well, I had it in the background.
Considering this group was completely and utterly done. Yeah, there was nothing to decide. City had won the group. Leipzig had secured second. Young Boys had secured third. And Red Star knew that they weren't going to be getting anything out of it. It was really, really fun. There was a lot of rotation from Pep Guardiola. Three academy graduates starting for City. Rico Lewis, who we've obviously seen a fair bit of. Oscar Bob, who we've seen a little bit of. And then debutant Micah Hamilton, as well as a couple of starts for Calvin Phillips, Sergio Gomez, and Stefan Ortega in goal as well. And it was Hamilton who stole the headlines. Great stuff. Great stuff. Not throwing away his shot, Hamilton. It was very, very enjoyable. The goal he scored to begin with is brilliant. A brilliant strike after some really nice play down that right wing. And his interview afterwards, he's like, I don't even normally play on the right wing. It was great. I was like, it's such a fun interview. You can check it out. He's like, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to say when Pep put me in the team. I don't know what to say now. Just having a great day. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing you want. But he was great. Oscar Bob scored the second. And to be honest, that was as good a goal. He went slaloming through the Red Star defense.
Yeah, I like that goal.
And then Hamilton wins the penalty for the third, which Calvin Phillips, of all people, scores his first City goal from. And nice moment between him and the travelling support as well, him thanking them for standing up for him and standing with him in what's been a difficult time.
I knew he'd take that pen. Like, as soon as it was awarded, Dylan loves penalties. Like, it's his big thing at the moment. It's like, he just wants to see everyone get a penalty. He's like, who'll take the pen? And I was like, I reckon Calvin Phillips will take it. He has no idea who Calvin Phillips is, by the way. And they handed it over. I was like, oh, they actually are giving it to Calvin Phillips. That's cool. I was pleased for him, actually. I tell you what, going back to Hamilton, there's this video going around 7 years ago. It was a 13-year-old as a ball boy at Man City, and Pep's encouraging him to maybe work a little bit quicker, get the ball back quicker, whatever. He pulled him aside, had a little word in his ear. You'll see this video undoubtedly on social media if you haven't seen it already. But yeah, 7 years later, here he is playing in the first team, scoring. And as I saw one report say, he's on his way from ball boy to boy wonder.
Nice, nice. Very much not throwing away his shot was the way I thought of it.
Mate, yeah, I mean, that's cool. You don't see many stories like that in modern day football, especially a club like that, to have your yeah, to have your pathway just like kind of featured like that. The fact that there is this actual footage of Pep talking to you when you're an actual kid on the sideline, and then you go into a Champions League match and score for him a few years later. Like, that's absolutely mental. Incredible. So yeah, brilliant stuff. Bit of romance.
Yeah, well, he's been at the club since he was 9 years old. So yeah, one for the record books, and I imagine a very happy family tonight. And the other game in that group, RB Leipzig, 1-2-1 against Young Boys. All the three goals came in about a 5-minute period at the start of the second half. It was rapid, but the first one from Benjamin Sesko is worth your time. He is making waves in Europe, and there's another one for his strike list here. It's an absolutely cracking strike as they put Young Boys to the sword. And that's it for part one. After the break, we're going to be talking about all of Tuesday's action, including Manchester United dropping out of European competition altogether. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC and Champions League Takeaway, where it's time to take a look at Tuesday's action. And Dean, we said we weren't going to do it. We said we weren't going to leave with Manchester United. We're going to leave with Manchester United.
Well, only in the second part. And to be honest, I'm not even going to go that deep on it because it was pathetic. It was never going to happen.
I actually thought they were all right.
They were all right, mate. Pathetic might be a bit harsh, but there was... There's just not much oomph about them, is there? It's just, you know, a few of them did all right. Even Anthony, like, flashes from him and stuff. But I'm not really going to even bother going into the performance too much. Ultimately, they're out of the competition in embarrassing fashion, finishing bottom. No Europa League football for them either. Pretty much a waste of time in general. They're now going to... My takeaway is probably the actual cost of this failure, and that's both on and off the
financially
pitch.
yeah,
because it's going to cost him like £28 million is the reported figure for going out of the Champions League early. And normally Man United wouldn't really have concern around that, but at a time when they don't have much power to go and buy players in terms of finances, that would have been handy. At a time when you got the ownership changing a bit with Ineos about to come in, would have been good to be at least in Europe in some shape or form. But my overall takeaway from this, mate, is that, look, Man United are at this stage now, irrelevant too far. But if you're under 23, right, and you're a footballer, Man United definitely do not have the appeal that they have to everybody that is older than that. United last won the Premier League 10 years ago. They last won the Champions League 15 years ago. And you look at it now and you think anyone that was born in the early 2000s doesn't really consider Man United to be a successful football team. I remember, like, when I was growing up, Liverpool had just had their era of dominance when I was very young. And then by the time I got to be older, it was all about Man United. And when people spoke about Liverpool, I just considered it to be the olden days. And I think that now, if you're a footballer breaking through, you're like of the next generation and you're in that bracket, I honestly think it goes up to probably 23. It might be a little bit below that. Say 20 and under right now. I think you just know that you'd probably have to check with someone. Mum, I heard that Man United used to be good. Is that true? Like, it's genuinely getting to be a bit of a joke. Like, because they're just so far from being the club that you hear about. And I think it's going to affect them in the next couple of years in terms of getting hold of these players that could actually change that.
I thought something was interesting was that I saw the shirt sales for last year from the sort of top 10 clubs in the world. United were still second. So there's still a massive global commercial behemoth.
Oh, yeah.
They've been overtaken by Liverpool, which is interesting, I think, just in terms of the power dynamics of that rivalry and who, you know, where people will look when they're looking for, you know, the great English clubs. Now, obviously, City are dominant in England at the moment, and their fan base will continue to grow in a worldwide fashion. But I don't think that their legacy and reputation within the game will continue to grow. Now, obviously, there are question marks over all of the legalities and the charges and all of that. But take that aside for a minute, because I don't think, you know, as a young player who, if City are trying to sign you, that's probably too much in your in the back of your thoughts. I actually think it's about where the club is and what they're looking to do and achieve. And while some people will have that complex of being like, I want to go and make United great again, I think the more global reach of that is probably starting to die a little bit. I think you're right. I think there is an element that when you talk about football clubs and you talk about where they are in the pecking order, United are quite far from the top table now.
Oh, yeah. They're very far from it.
And I don't think they're making, I think for someone like Chelsea, obviously the project isn't working particularly well in terms of results on the pitch right now. But you can kind of see the direction of travel. You can see what they're trying to achieve. I think with United, and look, lots of this goes up to the ownership, and that's not to lay the blame at kind of anyone's door rather than that. But you're kind of like, what's going on? What's the plan? What's the trajectory? And I can't see it.
Yeah. And look, I think it was kind of defined in the fact that last night, Man United did have a 20-year-old up front in Rasmus Højlund. You know, he's not certainly not a superstar at this point, but they did well to sign him, even though they definitely overpaid for him. But in an alternate universe, if things had gone Man United's way, it would have been Harry Kane up front. And that is huge. Like seeing Kane for Bayern Munich and seeing Rasmus Højlund playing for Man United, a player who actually has a good goal scoring record, obviously, in the Champions League so far, but last night had zero shots and no touches in the box and hasn't got a Premier League goal to his name so far. I'm not blaming him for this, but that's where Man United are now at. And to get back to having a player like Harry Kane seems so far away. The fact that they didn't manage to get him, and like for Kane to actually leave English football is significant enough. Like Tuchel's talked a few times about the fact that they stole him from English football, because you wouldn't have thought Kane would ever have left. And if he was going to stay, you would always have bet on Man United being the club he'd have gone to. I was convinced he would go there, to be honest. And he didn't. So now you're like, they lost it that much. And yeah, mate, it feels a world away that they're going to get back there. But that's my takeaway anyway. Man United just, I don't think we can say a new low. I think that
this wasn't the low.
When they win their game, we're going to have to call it an unexpected high.
Losing to Bayern Munich isn't a low.
No.
Bayern Munich can beat you.
But I mean, coming bottom of the group.
So can I make two points? One's a kind of point, and one's actually a question that I'd point to you. Is that I'm glad United aren't in the Europa League, because I don't like it when teams drop in. And look, United got to the final last time they were in the competition, but they'd started in the competition that time. And I think there's a feeling, probably not amongst Manchester United fans listen to this, because we cultivate a very, you know, respectful and well-informed footballing fan base on this podcast. But generally that the Europa League is, you know, in some way beneath them. And I think that actually what's been quite refreshing from someone like Liverpool this year is how seriously they've taken the competition, how seriously I think they'll continue to take the competition. I think Jurgen Klopp wants to win it, because it's the one he basically doesn't have in the tank at Liverpool. And now that that is the competition in front of them, I think they will go and look to win it. I think when you look at Galatasaray dropping in, Galatasaray will take the Europa League seriously, and their fan base will take the Europa League seriously. And someone who obviously loves that competition, I'm grateful in some ways that United aren't in it. And I think that their fan base will be as well, much of the fan base will be, but probably for the wrong reasons. Not because, you know, because actually we talk about Newcastle probably being able to use that as a stepping stone in order to move back or move up. United could probably do with it as a stepping stone to try and actually reinstate themselves in a good place in European football.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point, mate. I do take it on board, and I think, look, I'll be honest, like, Man United wouldn't have won the Europa League. They haven't got that mentality.
Not Liverpool in it, anyway.
there's no part of me that thinks United could have even been able to compete in the latter stages of that competition anyway, even if they had found themselves in it. But no, I can understand, like, you love the Europa League and you want to see clubs that want to be there. And Man United, I think they probably feel like they're above it. Yeah. They're not.
No, very much not. Very much not at this point. One other point. So Arsenal and obviously Manchester City both won their groups. And the other two English teams finished bottom of their respective groups. Now, Newcastle obviously had a difficult group, but would have expected to do better out of it, I think. And Manchester United would have definitely expected to progress from theirs. They become, I think, only the second and third English teams, or third and fourth English teams, perhaps, to finish bottom of their groups ever. There's a lot of talk about the dominance of the Premier League, but Real Madrid won their group, Real Sociedad won their group, Atletico Madrid won their group, and Barcelona won their group, albeit not particularly convincingly. And then you look at the Italian teams. Now, obviously, none of them actually won their groups. Napoli, Inter, and Lazio all qualified, and Milan dropped into the Europa League, finishing third. Is the dominance of English football overstated at the very top level? And I know that you can obviously look down the pyramid and you look at Liverpool in the Europa League, who've won their group, Aston Villa in the Europa Conference League, who are set to win their group on the final day. And there is that kind of strength in depth. And obviously West Ham have done well as well and will qualify from their group. So there is that kind of sense of depth, perhaps. But at the very top level, is the dominance of the Premier League overstated?
It's hard to read it, like, because the problem you get is that, like, these four teams that were representing England in the Champions League this season haven't turned out to be the four best teams that could have actually been competing in that competition right now.
Perhaps, but actually you could probably argue the same for Italy, right? About the four teams that are currently sat at the top of the Serie A table.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, if you're gonna measure
you'd
it
have
properly,
Girona, you know,
I guess you'd say, okay, well, Man City and Arsenal are potentially the two best teams we've got in the Premier League anyway right now. So one of them should go on and win it. And I think that there's an argument to be made that, yeah, you should expect one of those two to go and win it. Man City should be able to fight to retain that title. I don't think they'll be able to. I think that for them to now fight, like they're going to have to win the Premier League and also hold on to the Champions League. I mean, that is just such a big ask of this squad to go again. Like, Pep's already talked about the mental resilience and the physical difficulties that are going to go into winning the Premier League again. And no one's ever won it that many times. If they do it, it'll be unbelievable. There's a reason nobody's ever done it, because of what it takes to do it and to keep evolving. So to expect to win the Champions League alongside that is short. So you've probably got a good point, mate. I mean, maybe it is overrated. I mean, I don't know if there's more pressure on English teams to win it inside England than from outside anyway. I don't know how much fear there is anymore of English teams, to be honest.
I just saw Paul Merson speaking before the game between Newcastle and AC Milan, and it wound me up because he was like, I don't think there's any way that Newcastle don't win this game. Now, I'm not saying that that's the general viewpoint of everybody in England, but I was like, this is a Newcastle team who were out on their feet against Tottenham. I was like, even at full strength, I think Milan give Newcastle a pretty good game. I think that there's not much between those two teams. And so with this amount of injury and this much on the line, I think it's absolutely mad to say that there's no way that he could see Milan winning this game. And I do think there's just an element of that.
Well, there's a bit of arrogance to it all, isn't there?
Yeah, where I'm just a bit like,
I mean, the Premier League, because we do have the most money in our league. I don't think we attract the best players necessarily. Like, we don't always get the best players. I mean, we've seen Harry Kane, our best players, leave the league. So I don't think that's there anymore. But it's all a bit vulgar, I think, really, because there is an arrogance, and a lot of it's based around financial power. And that's because of the way that the Premier League did this amazing marketing of the product years back and managed to build it at a time when nobody else was putting that same focus on global branding. And the Premier League got the leg up from
the shark, yeah.
Yeah, and our teams have benefited from it and continue to do so. But they're also overpaying for average talent a lot of the time, like Man United have been, and they're feeling the force of that, and they're actually falling away. So actually, it's starting to cost us a little bit. It's funny, like Merson saying that about Newcastle. I mean, mate, I'll be honest, Fulham playing in Newcastle the weekend, I'm watching that thinking, blimey, we might have a chance. They've got no energy left in the tank.
They were quite tired at the end.
They've got nothing left in the tank now.
That is the big hope. All right, let's run through a couple of these other games. My big takeaway from Union Berlin 2, Real Madrid 3 was, well, actually I have two. One, what a pleasure it's been to have these Union Berlin fans in the Champions League. They have been remarkable in a stadium that was not their own, in a stadium they were not happy to be in. They have been there every single step of the way, and they deserved more than what they got. They've run Real Madrid twice, very, very close. My second takeaway is that this Madrid's team, they hate losing. It doesn't matter how many changes have been made. It doesn't matter who's on the pitch. Ancelotti has instilled this spirit. Real Madrid had won the group. It was done. It was dusted. There was nothing lying on this game for them. And even still, you know, 1-0 down and then at 2-2 after they're pegged back late on by this incredible fanatical stadium, they go and find a way. And it was the kind of work ethic, the bite of this side, and the fact that the celebrations were so intense when Dani Ceballos scored the winner. Now, you know, granted, it might be because Ceballos doesn't score very often and obviously has come back from the brink at Real Madrid and made a mark here. But just the way that they hunger to win every game, especially in this competition, is remarkable. And like nobody else, I think, and everybody wants to win. This Real Madrid side, they fear, almost like fear the idea of losing. And it's incredible what it produces sometimes in terms of these all-action performances.
I told you last time, mate, they're going to win it. I'm convinced. I'm convinced that Real Madrid are going to win it this season. And
you're convinced Real Madrid are going to win it most seasons. And to be fair, you're often right.
There's not like, they're not supremely, like, you know, a lot of seasons they would genuinely be the best team in the tournament. And I don't think necessarily they are the best football team in the Champions League, but they've got other things going for them that a lot of the clubs haven't. And that is a determination to live up to the expectation, which isn't evident at the moment at other clubs like Barcelona. It wasn't evident at Man United. Wasn't something that AC Milan were capable of pulling off. At Real Madrid, it's ingrained in them. This tournament obviously is like basically theirs. Like they consider.
But new players
theirs.
Come in and they immediately seem to just get it. I'm not sure what they do or how they sort of instruct them on what it means.
I think you go to this thing called Champions League school as soon as you sign.
Honestly, like it sounds ridiculous, but actually, generally,
and you have to pass all the exams and then you can play.
But there's something going on, and I want to know what, because they just seem to understand immediately exactly what it was. Fran García obviously was a Madrid, you know, kid in the academy, was brilliant last night. He's had a terrible time of it, to be honest, since coming back. He's been in and out of the side. He's been criticized for his defensive ability. He was everywhere yesterday. Bellingham is always everywhere, so that wasn't a particular surprise. But, you know, Ceballos coming on and making the difference. There was just a lot about this performance. You were like, that's a side who know exactly what they're about. And even with this kind of resurgent Union, who've saved their best for this competition, even if they've come bottom of their group, you know, to come back and make the difference from behind to begin with, and then obviously to win it late on. Yeah, stunning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Incredible stuff from Real Madrid once again. The other takeaway I have is that Benfica found a backbone. They won 3-1 at RB Salzburg. They needed to win by two clear goals to guarantee Europa League football. They're already out of qualifying for the Champions League. And they went 2-0 up relatively quickly in both goals in the first half. Angel Di Maria scored an Olympic goal from a free kick. Everything good about Benfica at the moment in this competition seems to come through Di Maria. He's just an incredible footballer. And then he slipped through Rafa Silva to score the second just before halftime. And it was like, okay, Benfica are currently in the position that they need to be in order to qualify for the Europa League. But equally, they were 3-0 up against Inter in Lisbon last time out, and they drew 3-3. So I'm not putting anything past them. And then obviously Salzburg come out after the break and they score. And you're going, okay, here we go again. Yeah. And Benfica missed chance after chance after chance after chance. It was almost flabbergasting how many chances Rafa Silva missed in the second half. And then late in added time, Arta Cabral, who moved from Fiorentina in the summer and has another one that's had a pretty rough time of it since he switched clubs, hasn't been able to make his mark on this Benfica side. A lot of people questioning. There were groans when he came on from the Benfica faithful.
Really?
And he scores this ridiculous sort of on the twist flick. to send them through into the Europa League. And the celebration's absolutely mighty. And suddenly I was like, oh, there you are. That's what you've been searching for. That's the moment. And to be honest, they didn't deserve. Over the course of these six games, Benfica haven't deserved to have got through in third place. They were the worst team in this group over the six games, but they've got it done. And this was a massive win in order to put themselves into the Europa League. And again, you know, we talk about different clubs having different approaches. Benfica will look at the Europa League and go, opportunity.
Oh, yeah,
because
absolutely.
Because obviously
yeah.
last year they had a brilliant year in the Champions League, got through to the quarterfinals, and then were eventually knocked out. But I think they went much further. They, you know, beat Juventus and PSG to top spot in their group to begin with. They had some, you know, miraculous performances in the competition. They will look at the Europa League and go, yeah, thank you very much. And to get there in this kind of fashion, I think also allows you that lift to kind of go, right, we've got there now, we're going for it, as opposed to dropping down from second, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I think that does make a lot of sense, mate. Yeah, and yeah, again, it comes down to the different mindsets that you get from sides, and they seem to have that realism about them, which is,
well, they need it because they've not been very good.
No, I know,
but they, but, you know, they found a way.
They still seek to be better every season and think that they might be able to push on. You wouldn't enter the season any other way, but like you say, they'll continue to take it seriously, and that's what you want.
Yeah. Okay. A team that are into the last 16 for just the second time ever. Copenhagen beat Galatasaray 1-0 at Parken. And the atmosphere here was absolutely electric. Unbelievable, the scenes. And Parken is such a cool stadium. It's one of those ones I'm like, that is a bucket list ground.
Yeah.
And it seems like a strange one. A lot of people be going, bucket list, Copenhagen's ground. But the way that it rocked during the Euros, obviously for Denmark, the way that it always seems to deliver on the European stage for Copenhagen, it's incredible. And the fans were in full voice. Another goal for Lucas Lehrer. And then he got sent off, which is the only blot on the copy book for Copenhagen yesterday. But the big takeaway, I think they would have qualified, obviously, anyway, with a draw. But the way that they dug in late on to protect this lead, there was the most ridiculous triple save on the line from this sort of Galatasaray onslaught towards the end of the game. Remarkable. And Copenhagen going to be fun, I think, in the knockout stages. They've got nothing to lose whatsoever. They will give anyone a game. And that stadium is going to be a very, very special place to be when that round of 16 comes out. So fair play to them. It was a very good atmosphere and a very cool thing for them to qualify.
Yeah, I mean, obviously all the teams that are in the first pot will be probably hoping that they play against them. But the good thing about being in that situation is that you're like, you're there for the occasion, but you're not there to just go through the motions. You're going to give it absolutely everything. It is now a cup final. Like, it's going to be an unbelievable experience. And they've shown that they're more than just, you know, I'm going to say a two-bob team. Well, I guess, yeah, I think you would have looked at it at the start. You would not have expected them to be in this situation because you would have written them off as not having the pedigree.
They were written off as fourth in this group, not qualifying. Yeah. So, I mean, for them to turn that around is remarkable. And United fans can take some solace in the fact that there'll be at least one Hoyland in knockout stages because Oscar came off the bench very late on yesterday.
Oh, that's embarrassing that for Rasmus, isn't it? Right. Oh, blimey. Yeah, I hope they don't have dinner anytime soon. Yeah,
absolutely. Lons beat Sevilla 2-1 to reach the Europa League, which is cool. It was a mad game, this. The early kickoffs were the PSV Arsenal game and the Lons Sevilla game. And if anyone decided that isn't an Arsenal fan or a PSV fan, that they were going to watch that one as a neutral rather than Lons Sevilla, head check, please. This had everything. It was incredible. First half, quite cagey. Both teams sort of feeding each other out. And then second half, exploded into life. Lons got a penalty. Frankowski absolutely buried it. And from there, you go, Lons only need a draw. Surely they can't throw it away from here. Then Sevilla get a penalty. Sergio Ramos steps up, misses the penalty, or is saved by Brice Samba. And then everyone goes absolutely mental in the Bolea. And people are going mad everywhere. Referee, after about 20, 30 seconds, pulls it back. Keeper off his line. Ramos, the ball's on him, to be fair, steps up again and Panenka's it. Scores. Becomes the top scoring defender in the competition's history with 17. And then when trying to win the ball back, just boots Brice Samba and gets booked for it. I was like, that man will never change whatsoever.
Honestly, he won't.
But then he did miss a pretty big chance to actually put Sevilla 2-1 up. And in the dying minutes, Lons hit the break, and Angelo Fulghini scored the goal. Now, Fulghini grew up as a Lens fan. He signed, I think, from Angers a couple of summers back for Lens. He grew up as a Lens fan in this part of the country, scored the winning goal to send them through, and the place went absolutely ballistic. So they're through to the Europa League. They're going to be no easy game. Obviously, Arsenal found that out to their detriment earlier in the group. Bola Air is a difficult place to go. And Lens are going to be fun, I think, in the Europa League. They've got a good side, an interesting side, and they're ticking along quite nicely. So I was delighted for them. Obviously, Sevilla not going to be able to defend their trophy. Might be the best thing that could happen to Sevilla, because currently they are closer to the relegation zone. Well, they look like they're going to be in a relegation battle right now, as opposed to fighting for Europe. They'll probably pull away, but they haven't been convincing whatsoever, even after a change of management that brought Diego Alonso in. So, yeah, actually might be the thing that Sevilla need, although I kind of said that last season and then they went on and won the competition anyway. So who knows? Who knows? But a good one. Alonso are going to be lots of fun. PSV drew 1-1 with Arsenal. A good goal from Nketiah. Not huge amounts to report, to be honest, about this game. It was an opportunity that we thought that Mikel Arteta might blood some of the youngest players. There was an
Ramsdale
opportunity.
Ramsdale got a game, mate.
Yeah, he did. He did all right. Did fine. Yeah. There was nothing he could do about the goal. Bounced off the post and goes in. It's a really,
really
good strike.
Sure, he won't play the next one, but never mind.
Yeah, good goal from Jorbi Vertessen. It's just one of those games. I thought Ethan Nwaneri was going to come on, but he didn't. He could have been the youngest Arsenal player in Champions League history, which would have been a nice touch. But Arteta came out afterwards and spoke about it. He was like, look, we got three injuries. We had to make the changes about it. We wanted to give them some time. If the game was comfortable, we'd made a lot of changes. There was a lot of new players on the pitch, and I didn't think it was the right opportunity. And actually, I kind of respected it, because he fronted up to it and was like, look, if we'd been 2-0 up, then I might have brought them on. But I wasn't going to do that when the game was in the balance. And then it might have been an uncomfortable one. And you know what? I thought it was a fair point.
Declan Rice at centre-back. Bit of experimenting, gave that a little bit of a bash, which is something we might see at some stage in the season. Don't know if that was just as a test to see in case, you know, Arsenal find themselves in the sort of predicament last season as when Rob Holding suddenly marking Erling Haaland. You don't want that to happen again. Next time it might be Declan Rice.
We don't want that to happen.
Want that to happen, but he's more than capable.
Yeah. I mean, Arsenal fans were a bit mad that they had a goal ruled out that Kivior scored. But Gabriel is definitely trying to play the ball. And he's definitely offside. So I'm not quite sure why everyone was going so mad about that one. Napoli won 2-0 against Braga. Again, pretty routine this. Braga are a little bit unlucky in the second half not to pull one back. But they needed to win by two clear goals to actually go through in this game. And they were never going to score four against his Napoli side. Nathan did well on the left at left back, which was interesting. He's played centre back, came in as a centre back, basically as the Kim Min-jae replacement, and played left back here. Did really well. Set up the second goal for Osimhen. So fair play to him. And then finally, Inter drew 0-0 with Real Sociedad. A little bit of a funny one. This meant the Real Sociedad won the group. Inter had to win in order to make sure that they came top seed. Inzaghi made a lot of changes. He started Alexis Sanchez up front with Marcus Thuram instead of Lautaro. He dropped Barella. They made a lot of sort of minor changes in this setup. And then Inter couldn't get going, didn't get the win. Lautaro couldn't shift the tide of the game when he came on. Arnautovic came on at the same time, which meant that there was never a point in this game where Thuram and Lautaro were playing alongside each other. It's got a little bit of heat from the Italian press for basically over-rotating, although they have another massive game coming up this weekend, and he does need to use his squad. It was a funny one. If they'd won 1-0, he would have been praised, you know, his praises would have been sung for the way that he'd utilized his squad. But as it is, these are the twists and turns of football. You win, you get praised, you lose, you don't.
Yeah, I mean, they have got a big game because they're playing Lazio. I'm pretty sure that's Sunday night, and this game was Tuesday night.
He does have a good, and you know, he does have a good squad, and Inter have built their squad really well and been able to mix it around. And it's not something that's new to Inzaghi, especially in terms of mixing up his forward line.
Yeah, I think that is a strange one. You're right. It's hard to understand that, but they'll be fine. I mean, look, the way that this is all panned out now, we're all set for Monday's draw, aren't we? The last 16, it's all there. And yeah, Inter will be in pot two.
They're a side that nobody will want.
No, well, this is the thing, and they could still end up with...
we could have a repeat of last week's final.
Last year's final, yeah. I mean, that would be... I hope we do, actually. I'd like to see something like that. I want to see one massive game, and that's probably the... Well, obviously, PSG actually are in pot two as well, aren't they?
Barcelona are getting PSG, as our friend Mohamed Butts just said. He's a guaranteed. And I said, well, it is the heritage of this competition.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. We'll, I'm sure, break down that one pretty soon.
We will indeed. We will indeed. And with that, it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to our Champions League guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate. Was it the Champions League draw that I missed that time? And then you broke it to me across a whole episode. And I just like listened. Oh, the groups, I think, wasn't it?
It was the groups.
It was the groups. How would you do it again?
Let's see how we do. Because it's on Monday at 11. You're going to find it very difficult, I think, to stay off it for a whole day before we record it. But we'll see how we go. And we'll be back on the Patreon feed tomorrow, where we'll be looking at all the Europa League and Europa Conference League action and who makes it through to the playoff rounds and the rounds of 16 in those competitions. So please do give that a go. We're in free trial mode ahead of Christmas, and then obviously there's January to look forward to with all of Dean's updates on the transfer window. So it's a good time to get involved. Thank you so much for listening to Ranks FC. We'll see you very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.